Hello, I'm Sheila Dillon, and welcome to this BBC download of the Food Programme. For information on the BBC's terms and conditions of use, visit www.bbc.co.uk/radio4. And now, enjoy the podcast. Quintessential Paris, a woman at a market stall, full of that French self-confidence around food that we Anglos expect, critically eyeing what looks to me as gleaming and fresh a display of fish as you could find. Today we're telling a story of food, family and fashion. Parisianly romantic in some ways, and yet not at all what I expected.
A mulet, what's a mulet in English?
Mullet.
A mullet, thank you. See, I haven't shot for fish in Ireland or England for 25 years. So I
this is the person who's revolutionised what it means to be a cook in France, a country still notorious for its gastronomic chauvinism. Trish de Seine is female and not French. She's not a household name here, even in Northern Ireland, the country where she grew up, but in France, it's different. Since she wrote her first book 15 years ago, Trish de Seine has sold more than 1 million cookbooks and been named as one of the most influential women in the country.
The book is not from a French woman, but from an Irish woman, so it's very weird. I learned French cooking in that book.
Trish was the first who have written a cookbook without to be a chef.
That's why maybe we love her.
You love her?
Yes.
You don't just like her, you love
no,
her?
No, we love her, really.
France, which still sees itself as the gastronomic capital of the world, has been changing its cooking ways, following the lead of a foreigner. It's a success which still baffles Trish de Seine herself.
I hope you're going to ask other people about me, because I don't know. I don't know why, really. I have theories, but, you know, you need to
What's
ask
your theory?
Me. The theory is that it was okay for an outsider to cook that way. It was okay for an Irish woman to say that you don't have to go through 50 steps and you don't have to know how to cook a cassoulet like people in Toulouse cook a cassoulet. I mean, why would you? You go to Toulouse or you go to a good restaurant where you do that, and you do the other stuff at home.
That other stuff is what Trish de Seine has been quietly teaching the French in her books. So 2 weeks ago, we went to meet Trish in Paris. But before we met the woman herself, we talked to one of her hundreds of thousands of fans, someone who knows more than a thing or two about France, its cooking and its cookbooks. You're clutching a book in your hand as you're doing this. So what's that got to do with it? Deborah Dupont-Daguet owns and runs the biggest cookbook shop in the world, La Librairie Gourmande, on Swanky Rue Montmartre. She's 35 and used to teach law at one of the universities in Paris, till a love of cooking, fostered by the informality, charm and usefulness of Trish de Seine's books, got her into the cookbook business.
The name of the book is Le Bonheur est dans le plat.
Happiness on a plate.
Well, on a plate.
Yeah.
And it was my first cookbook. So when I was 22, I moved from my parents and I bought a cookbook. It's perhaps my favorite book. The book is not from a French woman, but from an Irish woman. So it's very weird because I learned French cooking in that book.
There were cheats puddings, tagines from her friends, as well as French classics.
In Le Bonheur et dans le Pré, she called one recipe le gratin gifoutou. It's when you are on Sunday evening and you open the fridge and you take every kind of ingredient you find and you put it all together. And you put it in the oven.
It's kind of leftovers.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of a little bit of ratatouille you might find.
Yeah.
Some potatoes, some broccoli, some carrots.
Yeah. You never seen that kind of tips of advice in a French cookbook 15 years ago. It was completely crazy.
Hundreds of thousands of other French women agreed with you and bought this book.
Mm? She was too young to be my mother. But she's like a big sister or an aunt or a friend, and I grew up with her book. she always be in my life, with her family, with her friend, for example, in Le Bonheur et dans le Plat.
There's a photograph of Trish.
Friends. So friends of Virginie, hers. Emmanuel, Sabine and Valérie. I never met this woman, but I make recipes from her. Le pot-au-feu de Virginie, la tagine d'Emmanuel, la poule au pot de Sabine.
You feel a connection to these people you've never met.
Yeah, completely. And I think it's the strength of Trish, because I'm sure I'm not the only one in France to have that kind of perception.
Trish's book sales confirm that she's not. We met the woman herself in the Paris equivalent of a grand Arga showroom, an elegant gallery dedicated to the art of the French cooking stove. Trish is friends with the owner.
Bonjour, Xavier.
Bonjour.
Her French is flawless, but her looks give her away. Tall, blonde, and blue-eyed, très Anglo-Saxon.
My voice was a very, you know, décomplexé is what they said. So, is that an English word? Décomplexé. No complexes about cooking. And it's true, I was totally unshackled by any type of studies or training, chef's training.
Your foreignness was a plus.
Yes, absolutely, yes. It was okay. It seemed to me that they could take it from somebody who wasn't French. And also, in the way I was writing French, I'd drop English words in there because I didn't know the French word, and it was a very chatty, informal style.
This is an Irish woman, not the first, who fell in love with Paris.
I came to Paris, as I always say, through love, because of love. But when I was at school, on one of those school exchanges, I ended up in a family with a really incredibly food-loving family. I mean, these were the people, they cooked breakfast, lunch, dinner, four courses at lunch, four courses at dinner. And the mother, she worked in her husband's company, and at about 11 o'clock, she comes storming out of the offices beside the house, and she said, right, come, we're going shopping. And she'd take her big basket, and she'd go round, if it was market day, we'd go park in the market, and she would make up her menu for the day and possibly the next day as she was going through the stalls. 40 minutes later, there would be a three-course lunch. I just thought that was the most incredible thing. I was absolutely fascinated by that.
It seemed a world away from a youth spent in Northern Ireland in the 60s and 70s during some of the worst of the region's troubles.
So you grew up in County Antrim, mm-hmm. in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. Did you eat well?
We certainly did. I grew up on a farm and my father was a beef farmer. The taste of food was always something that was extremely important to both my mother and my father. A lot of care was taken into how the meat would be cooked, into how the vegetables would be cooked. Those very plain meals were always done with care. Because in Northern Ireland in those days, it was difficult to circulate, it was difficult to drive around. There were very few restaurants. Belfast was really a no-go area. And we were out in the countryside. I went to school in Belfast, but we lived out in the countryside. So therefore, because we didn't go out that much, and they didn't go out that much, they entertained a lot. And so they had friends over for dinner parties. The table, the courses, and I would often help with that. I would make the puddings, and I used to do creme caramel, lemon cheesecake. There's a sort of cream and ginger snap biscuit concoction. That's what they would eat.
You say that Belfast, when you were at school, was a no-go area at night. Was it that sense that you couldn't live a life that you wanted to in Northern Ireland?
There was that sense, yes, very much so. It was a very sort of blitz attitude to what went on. But it was a seriously dangerous time during the 60s and 70s. It was always understood in my family that, well, for the three of us, for our three children, that we would not stay in Northern Ireland to study, and we would not go to Dublin, being from County Antrim, Protestant Presbyterian family, Dublin, no. So the idea of getting out, perhaps coming back one day, but getting out, getting our education and getting out was certainly something that was pretty much understood in my family.
The first escape, to use Trish's word, was to Scotland to study languages at Edinburgh University.
When I was studying in Edinburgh, and that's where I met my future husband, Frenchman, from a very food-loving family and family-in-law, so wine on one side and flour milling on the other side. So even by French standards, very concerned about
their food and enjoying their food. We would save up to go to restaurants rather than always being in the pub. We ate out a lot, so we must have looked quite odd. I remember going to the same restaurants as my lecturers. My French lecturers, actually, we used to be in one or two of them, so that was okay. That was looked on approvingly.
So then, just a short hop to France, marriage into that wine and milling family, a career in fashion marketing in Paris, and the responsibilities of family cooking.
It felt like a big food playground. When I was able to cook for just myself or a couple of friends, when I had to cook for my family-in-law, really nerve-wracking. I mean, I think for anybody arriving in any family, when you do the first thing with the belle famille, with the family-in-law, it's always a bit difficult. It has not to do with the food, it's to do with, you know, are they going to accept me, are they going to like me, whatever. But very quickly, I realized that their expectations were so low of what I would ever be able to do.
You're not French. Yeah.
The most liberating thing in the world. I remember very clearly cooking turkey in a curry cream sauce with sultanas, and they thought this was incredible. It was so exotic.
Family cooking, even of exotic turkey dishes, is one thing. But I wondered about the big jump to writing best-selling, attitude-changing cookbooks.
I worked for the Northern Ireland Tourist Board for quite a while, actually. That was a challenge in those years.
That was a challenge in those years.
Not anymore, but it was
then,
in those years.
My
goodness. So, yes, I was on maternity leave, and I was a little bit at a loose end, and I set up this mail order company. You see, I'm doing that female thing of downplaying. If I were a man, I'd say, I started my company. You know, I did a startup.
Her timing was good. 1999, Jamie and Nigella were making it big in Britain. And French publishers were carefully watching book sales over the channel.
They were tuned in to what was happening in Le Monde Anglo-Saxon, and so they saw this Anglo-Saxon, you know, this in her kitchen, thinking, oh, well, she'll do for a book. There I go again. And then they said, would you want to do a cookbook? And I said, yes, why not?
Trish Desen is modest about her successes, but that why not shows a woman willing to take chances, work hard and develop new skills, while she brought up four children and played the fashionable wife role to a successful businessman. Cooking was part of that complex life, but she could see that not every French woman had time for it.
I still cooked. A lot of my French girlfriends at that time did not cook. It was a kind of statement, sort of, they felt it was anti-feminist to cook. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day and he said, I remember going to dinner parties, chic dinner parties in Paris, where you'd go in and there'd be the most delicious foie gras that somebody would cut up and some lovely toast and you'd have some great champagne. And then they'd pull out the sushi menu and say, okay, everybody, have what you like. And that was perfectly okay, because who was going to cook? It just wasn't done. So I was never obsessive. And I hate this thing these days about, oh, I'm food obsessed, oh, I love food, oh, the passion I have for food. It wasn't like that. It's just something that really was woven into life, and perhaps I was doing it with a little bit more zeal than other people were doing it at that time. I had no idea that anybody would ever pay any attention to it. It was all a bit of a lark, and it went mad, and the book was very popular, got a lot of attention, sold a lot of copies, and off we went.
Critique de Gilles Pudlowski. C'est drôle, vif, imagé, it's funny, full of life, evocative, not always nice or naive, as you would think of a Brit in Paris being amazed at... Elle Magazine, à table. On admettra qu'avec un tel cursus, we did not expect her to be the French culinary phenomenon that we know now her to be.
Books 2 and 3 came out the next year. Her book on chocolate, Je veux de chocolat, I want chocolate, sold more than 400,000 copies. Trish was a household name. They were beautiful books, nothing like the chef's textbooks which had come before. There's a sense of the setting, the life full of joie de vivre that the dishes were part of.
That one, for example, is sort of...
Trish's quirkiest bestseller was Ma Petite Robe Noire, My Little Black Dress, and Other Recipes, which in 2006 won a special judge's prize at the Gourmand International Cookbook Awards. A witty book that played into the way the French like to think of themselves.
Having a cooking repertoire is a bit like your wardrobe. Basics, classics, the stuff you make again and again. There's like a fashion victim chapter in there. And that was one of the first times in France where there was a book that was slightly... that was such a high concept.
Funny and stylish. And Trish has style.
Does that matter, you think, that that was a key thing for that for success in France?
Oh, well, I think I'd be completely disingenuous if I said no. Yes, it did matter. I think if you understand that the people who were doing that type of writing, which was la cuisine de la ménagère, you know, the housewife's cooking is what they called it, which I think is appalling. That's where the real stuff happens, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, the women who had written those books were either totally invisible, or there were people like Maïté. There's an absolute national treasure of a cook called Maïté, who was a very formidable woman from the Southwest. And she had a TV show, and she would kind of rip up rabbits and hares and cut heads off live chickens. I'm exaggerating just a little bit, not really, but you know, it was a very sort of gory and earthy way of writing and cooking, and that is what had come before. So, and I was what? So, in my late 30s, I had three small kids, so I was a working woman, an ambitious woman, because I had my startup, and I suppose I looked okay.
She became a columnist for Elle magazine, writing the recipes its readers cut out and save in ring binders. And then in 2009, French Vogue named her as one of the 40 most influential women in France. She had become, as Deborah Dupont-Daguet explained, a cook who was also a feminist role model.
For example, she said that when you invite friends come for a party or... you don't have to be in the kitchen alone and everybody is enjoying without you. So it was very new, I think, for French cookbook. So 10 years ago or 15 years ago, a French woman should be in the kitchen and the Frenchman and the friends are in the living room, enjoying without you.
But these weren't just books for cooks. Trish's books were also stirring up the restaurant scene.
I'm Stéphane Reynaud. I'm a French cuisinier.
Ardèche-born Stéphane Reynaud is that rare thing in France, a chef whose 15 books, all written since meeting Trish, sell around the world. His restaurant, Villa Neuve-Trois, is at the very end of the metro line in eastern Paris. He says Trish's informal, stylish books marked a new era for food writing in France.
It was something completely new for us in France.
Really?
Yes. Completely new? Yes, that's true. Trish was the first who have written a cookbook without to be a chef. That's why maybe we love her. There is no woman who have written so many cookbooks on... there is no woman in France who have sold so many cookbooks. So the first book was Petit Plat Entre Amis, and I love the spirit of this book because you have friends, you have family, and it's a book about life, about season, real food, again, real food. It's not a book of chef, you know, but there is a lot of inspiration in this book.
When you bought it, did you know she was Irish?
No. I've discovered on her book when I've opened the first page, and I was happy to see that she's Irish and French too. I don't know if she's more Irish and more French.
The next morning, we take the metro to meet Trish in a cafe in the northeast corner of the city. She's nursing a headache. What two short days in Paris and celebrating a new book will do. After a black coffee, she offers to show us around the neighbouring market.
So we're on Boulevard de la Villette, and it's a Saturday morning autumn market, just at the top of Rue Saint-Mathe. And it's in a particularly beautiful setting with the trees on either side. It's absolutely lovely. We've got lovely light. What I would do if I did have six or eight people for dinner tonight is you do your first sweep. You work out what looks good,
where the good prices are. Vous allez tout de suite au plus cher, hein, quand même.
Trish is much taken by the bright, fresh appearance of the fish on one particular stall.
That was one of the most animated fishmonger exchanges I've ever heard.
And he dropped in a little bit of flirting at the end. You hear he said, well, you know, there's something here for everybody's tastes. You're just like me. I prefer blondes to brunettes, so you just have to take it, you know.
We pass autumnal fruits and vegetables, figs and chanterelles in season. The next stall, huge wheels of blue cheeses, and then a traiteur.
With all these fabulous labelled ducks and chickens, and there's a mallard, game season's in as well.
And seafood. The owner, shucking scallops, looks on as people take their pick of piles of live blue lobsters, alongside brown shrimps, winkles or bigorneau, and sea urchins.
They're the most delicious thing after the market, with a cup of coffee. They're really, really lovely. It was a chef who made me discover that, and he actually then cooked it into a dish.
So we've done a sweep.
Yes.
What would you buy? I mean, what seems of what we've seen?
I haven't had enough figs this year, so I would go and buy those figs. They're not the height of the season. It's the end of the season, so I probably cook them into something. I might make a tart, or I might poach them slightly. And I think I would take a whole fish from the first fishmonger we went to, because he's particularly passionate, to use a very overused word about food, but he really is. It would be lovely actually to be going back to some nice big kitchen. But not this evening. No.
Trish isn't going back to any grand Parisian kitchen, because this city, her home, and the backdrop for so many of her books, is now part of her past. That family life photographed in her first books might be part of the lives of Deborah and hundreds of thousands of other readers, but for Trish, it's no longer a reality.
People have very, rightly so, very romantic ideas of what living in Paris can be like, but when you really live in a country and you really integrate and you're part of a family and you go through the big things, marriage, family members being ill and dying, and divorce in my case, you really feel the full weight of a country's culture and social rules. And I think that when our marriage ended and I really found myself with these four kids, we had joint custody, so they weren't with me the whole time, but that was a very, very difficult period, and it changed the way I cooked. It changed the types of cookbooks that I was producing.
But Ireland was calling her back. Irish broadcaster RTE gave her two TV series, and suddenly a new kind of book seemed possible.
It was an odd time, and as I travelled more in Ireland, I described it actually recently as every time I went back, it was like having this big hug. It just felt so lovely, and I suppose I was nostalgic, I was homesick, and even more so because it was tough in France. The book was a little bit about that, and also because that was the Republic of Ireland, which I didn't know very well. I was brought up in Northern Ireland, we would never go there. And then when I was growing up, I always had this idea, which turned out to be completely true, that in the South things were much more fun, people were having great time, and the food was good, and it was all great crack. And so I've been going back little by little, and now my kids are quite big, and so I'm there quite a lot now.
After 12 books written in French, in France, she's written Home, a massive, handsome volume that's a voyage through Irish food, old and new, from the North Ulster coast to the tip of the Dingle Peninsula. Irish food joined up.
For a woman from Northern Ireland to be able to have cracked France, I mean, it's amazing.
Paula McIntyre is a chef, writer, broadcaster, and the new head of Slow Food in Northern Ireland.
She's not that well known to people in Northern Ireland or the general public, really just to, you know, to food writers and people in restaurants.
Did her success in France, because of course she's known all over France,
exactly,
did that surprise you?
No, it didn't actually, because she comes from a farmhouse background, and people that make tray bakes and bread, women in Northern Ireland, have standards as exacting as Michelin star chefs in Paris, to be honest with you.
You put those same standards to bear, yes, on tray bakes or and our bread, soda bread.
And or an apple tart.
Her new book, Home, it's one of the most comprehensive books anyone's written about the food of Ireland. What do you think of it?
There is a difference culturally from a food point of view between Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. Sometimes I get quite frustrated, you know, trying to explain to somebody the difference between wheaten bread, which we call brown soda bread in the north. But Trish really has captured the difference. And yet it's a celebration of the whole island. And I think Trish's book is just coming at exactly the right time. The local audience in Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland will just grasp this. And she's got a new food series coming out on BBC Northern Ireland, which is great. And I think that'll help her as well.
Those Irish flavours are what Trish often longed for during the Paris decades.
The excellent bacon and sausages and Irish salty butter, yellow salty butter on toasted wheaten soda bread. Yes, always. And those are the things I would always make a beeline for as soon as I got home.
What do you think the French are going to make of this woman who has been writing about France, but Irish food?
I hope they'll have a go at the recipes.
Boiled cake?
Gâteau bouilli. It doesn't sound so good in French.
Carrageen. You think the French are ready for seaweed?
I don't know. That I don't know. I think they're okay with it in butter. I don't know about this remedy, although this one really does work. There's a little story behind that, about how it cured me. I think they'll be interested in it because I hope it's a bit of a snapshot of Irish, traditional and contemporary Irish food culture. So I hope they'll enjoy it.
Deborah at the Librairie Gourmande already has a copy in French, and she's optimistic. This is called Mon Irlande. Are the French going to buy that?
We never have a cookbook about Irish cooking.
Never.
Never. It's more than a cookbook, because when you see the subtitle, Une balade culinaire en passant par Belfast, Dublin, Cork and Galway. So, cook trip in Ireland, there is address,
restaurant,
producer. For example, for me, I was wondering to go to Scotland next summer with my child. And when I saw the book, I said, oh, perhaps Ireland, in fact. It's not Ireland in general, it's Trish. For French people, for French women, I think we grew up with Trish Desain's book since 15 years. So for the first time, she speaks about her country. And she opens her heart. When I see that kind of products, that kind of recipes, I want to make it at home.
The full Irish, the full Irish breakfast, a Lulster fry.
Pretty funny.
Yeah. La même histoire.